Hello and welcome to another episode of Spill the Chai with me, Ritha.
And me, Rabia.
welcome back. I'm still buzzing from last week's episode. Not last week's, well, last episode, because it was a couple of weeks ago now, wasn't it? With Mariam Wahid. And yeah, I really love that episode. I listened to it. I think I listened to it three times in total in the end. And yeah, they're just, if you haven't listened to that one yet, definitely do go back and listen. I guess today's Rich Tea topic is kind of linked with a lot of the things that we were talking about last week in terms of our stories and belonging and home, and it's kind of like a follow-on from that. And we will be discussing and looking at what legacy means to us, or what we feel that legacies are, or what kind of legacy we hope to leave behind, hopefully, if we're lucky to do so. And yeah, do you want to start, Rabia? What is legacy? Yeah, what do you feel a legacy is for you, or what have you thought about the kind of legacy you would like to leave behind?
I guess I always think about Rafe when I think about legacy, because he is, I guess, part of that. It's such a good question, and it's very much, it reminds me of Layla Sard's question, what does it mean to be a good ancestor? Because I think I can't separate what does legacy mean to me and that question, really.
Absolutely. Kind of, yeah, I really agree.
They're like kind of the same. And, you know, it, even just thinking about what does legacy mean to me, I wouldn't have even gotten to this sort of place in my thinking, in my being, had it not been for scholars and particularly Black women and mm-hmm. femmes and non-binary folk who have been doing the work from day dot. And I kind of owe that. I always say it, but I always feel like I need to acknowledge that. So, ooh, what does it mean to me? It's, and I think I've said this before on the podcast, it's trying to do my bit to leave the world a better place than I found it, for not just for my kid, but for everyone, really.
Yeah.
And that's such a high level general statement, but I think that is the kind of the linchpin, really. And sometimes when I go about, like, this is why sometimes I get really frustrated with working in corporate capitalism for like the last, you know, 10 or so years. Often you could be sitting there like working through some plan or some spreadsheet, and I'm just thinking, who is this for? Like, why am I spending my time doing this? Like, how is this in aid of the mission of leaving the world a better place than I found it? Because most of the time it's not. Yet the alternative to not having a job is like starvation. I'm not saying that that would happen, but like in reality it would just mean struggle.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's a really big question.
It is a big question. I feel like if we have the privilege of growing old, I feel that your definition of legacy will become clearer, more specific. Because I feel that I don't know if I was thinking about legacy in terms of, you know, as a solid thing, as something that I leave behind in this world. Yeah, like a year or two ago, I don't think I was thinking about it in those terms. I definitely resonate with, you know, trying to leave the world a slightly better place. I mean, that would be on a very probably microscopic level. It would be, you know, within my community in terms of friendships and family and like the girls' school, hopefully, or, you know, on that kind of localized level.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that I'd have like a global impact, but you know, you never know. I've lost two people in the last, within a year of each other, that I love very much. My nana last April, and then Sarah Popo just, you know, at the end of March. So I think that definitely fed into that deeper thinking about what legacy is. And for me, I don't know if it's the same thing that keeps coming up for you or not, but for me, it's very much intertwined with storytelling, in the sense that the way, you know, especially if you don't have like a book out there in the world, or if you don't have something tangible in that sense, then, you know, what other ways are you able to leave a legacy? And I think it's like, I hope everybody has a chance to meet people in their lives that will speak about them even after they're gone, in a good way. So I feel like that is what I'm very much thinking about for my legacy, is like the stories that people will share with one another in order to keep me alive, you know, in a sense. And I feel like that's kind of what legacy is for me, is, yeah, the stories that people will tell after you're gone about you. And I want them to be nice stories. I don't want them to say like, oh, you know, Rither, glad that she's dead.
I don't think there'll be a single person on this earth who would think that. And can I just say, like, you were talking about impact, but you don't, like, you talked about impacts on your, like, your localized level, like with your friends and with your school, but it's never a localized level, because when you shake up a system like the school that your girls go to, or the things that you model for your children, so that they go out, the way that those children in the school, not just your own, but in the school, will have their worldviews widened, that impact is exponential, because they take that forward with them. It means that, you know, they're a more open-minded, a compassionate children that are going to turn into adults one day, mm-hmm. and leave legacies of their own. And then obviously I'm your friend and cousin, and like, you're an amazing friend, obviously, but the impact is like, the impact of like your friendship is, you know, beyond just like cheerleading, which you are probably the best cheerleader, like the ultimate cheerleader. You're so like, you get so gassed for everyone, and you're always so supportive, and you're always the first to offer up help. But what you do is you help people sow seeds of self-belief, and you help me and help your friends when they've got problems frame things in different lights. You offer alternative perspectives, and you're generally just a laugh and a gas and just so fun and so silly and creative and brilliant that, you know, they, when the impact on those friendships mean that they, like, for me, and I can't speak for other people, but I know for me, you know, you make me, I say, you don't, you give me, you help me see the light within myself that helps me show up better in the world. And when I show up better in the world, I can serve you, and I can serve my immediate community, and I can serve my family, and I can do those things, and I can go and do petitions, and I can share a photo, or I can tell a little bit of, you know, I can do things because, you know, girl's got my back. So, like, the impact is always more than the, you described it as microscopic, but I see it as like exponential. Like, you're this, like, you know, that you're like the, like, this walking light that, like, it radiates, and then, like, people who come in contact with it are like, oh, I'm lit up, and then, like, they can, like, light up. It's literally that. It's literally that. It's infectious. Aww. In, like, the best way.
Well, now I feel, like, very egocentric, because I feel like I've made this all about myself. But
no, you haven't. You haven't. I just wanted to offer that world. I just wanted to offer that perspective.
Yeah.
Because I've never seen... it is, I've never seen legacy, but specifically you and what you do and how you are and who you are. It's not just what you do, it's just who you are. I've never seen it as microscopic.
No, I think that's really powerful. Thank you so much for, firstly, all those amazing words. I'm like a little bit like, oh, they're still like coming towards me. I'm soaking them in.
So good. Like,
you know, like a nice rain on your face after it's
been also hot. Like, in terms of evidence, you've also got an Instagram platform of over 30,000 followers. So that's also not microscopic. So, like, when you share your messages and you tell your story, stories, plural, because you're multifaceted, there's a real, like, there's a real ripple.
Yeah, it is a ripple effect. I think that's really important, actually. And I think... like, I guess I was feeling a little bit sad about the people, like, people whose stories perhaps won't
get told.
Be told. Yeah, and, you know, obviously those are going to be the most marginalized in society. And just thinking back to last year, there were a couple of people experiencing homelessness in my community locally. And, you know, a lot of people kept up with them, you know, chatted with them, learned about their lives and why they were experiencing homelessness or whatever issue they were going through. And then sadly, like, they had passed, and but people shared their stories of them, you know, in a very human way, not in a pitied way, not in a condescending way. And I thought that was really beautiful. And I think in some ways social media has helped, like, amplify stories, but I think I still very much feel that the deepest way we can connect is face to face. I think that's when our stories really sit in, like, the hearts and minds of people,
and we have evidence of that. And I know we talk about it all the time, but that Galentine's event in 2019, that was the last one that they did because pandemonium happened.
Yeah.
But
still going.
That was really, really powerful. I mean, and it was through, like, Yazzie's beautiful spoken word poetry where she told stories and she painted this picture. And it was when she told that story, every one of us had our own mini light bulb moment where we found something in ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think you're right, face to face is, we've got to do it. We need another event. We need to do it.
I think we could do it in a really safe and wonderful way. I would absolutely love to, because I truly think that, you know, because again, the reason why I've been thinking so deeply about it is because actually, like, my Nano passed and Sarah Papa passed, but we hold them close in our hearts by telling the stories, like, oh, you know, she used to do this or she liked that. And one of my aunts, my Nano's daughter, she compiled a whole recipe book of Nano's recipes.
Oh.
And it's been shared just amongst the siblings. I was like, oh, we should make it into a cookbook. And not to like make money off it, but to kind of share that joy and share her story and create further her legacy, because actually she built a really beautiful legacy, not only within her children, but within her community, like building the wells and not even wells, actually, they're like water things that hold water. I don't even remember.
Water butts, aren't they? They're like the tanks.
Yeah. Yeah, like the water tanks, exactly, a water tank. And feeding like the poor in the villages and stuff like that. Like that was her legacy, that her children are continuing in her name in order to honour her legacy and continue it. But, you know, there are all these that I feel like they're tangible things that have passed down from her to them to me. Like, I cook her recipes, and when every time I cook, I smile when I smell like certain spices, or when I hear a certain sizzle, or when I see something emerge from like that I'm cooking, and I smile to myself thinking, ah, this is what she would have looked at and seen and said, like, yeah, this is right, this tastes perfect, or this smells good, or, you know, you bonafide that perfectly. I don't know what.
Yeah.
I don't know what the...
Sorted. Like, that's the English word.
Like, more in... No, it's more intense. It's like...
It is. It is more intense.
Cooked down.
Yeah. It's to cook down, like, reduced down or something.
Reduced down, yeah. Like, it's that, yeah. It's that thing.
It's like an intense...
intense cooking down. Of whatever it is. Usually meat. But yeah, so it's like in those little things and in those little moments. And I just, and then I heard something the other day. So, you know, it's Ramadan at the moment still. And we have Unity FM on, because we try not to like listen to like mainstream radio music and that kind of thing. You know, just to connect deeper on a spiritual level.
Yeah, it just helps. That kind of thing. Yeah.
I can't say that we completely abstain from it, but... like, you know, just reduce it and stuff. But anyway, we have Unity FM on, and they have all sorts of talks and stuff like that, and it was just something that caught my ear whilst I was cooking and listening. And somebody said that, you know, some of the, so there's a term called sadaqa in Islam, which is like a blessing, I guess. Would you say that is a blessing? I'm not. Let me just quickly do a Google, because it's sometimes difficult for me to translate it. It's kind of like sadaqah. Literally means righteousness.
Yeah.
So that's the literal meaning. So, but what it is like a. Oh yeah, it's like a. A blessing for, with the intention of pleasing Allah, I suppose. But
yeah,
so it's a non-selfish act of worship, I suppose.
Yeah.
But so that sounds like all big and fancy, but so they can be, and this is what they were saying, is that it can be very small and simple, like just making somebody feel good about themselves, feel happy in a moment, feel seen. And I was like, oh, you know, when you feel like a little bit disconnected spiritually or whatever, and then I heard that and it caught my ear, and
you
I
were
was like,
I do that.
Like, I do that. Yes, you do. Me I do that. So I'm like, it's been like a nice little circle. So
you are spiritually aligned, and that's amazing.
So, but it was like, and you know, obviously you do that. Yeah, you do that often as well. Like, you know, constantly, I would say. And but it's nice because sometimes we think of like these bigger things. I think, you know, whether you're Muslim or not, whatever your beliefs are, but often we think about like these big gestures, right? Of like what should we be doing in our lives and careers, and like you were saying, you know, with work and what is the purpose of doing it. And I feel like, actually, because you said something about like capitalism and working in like these systems, but I feel like you've gotten to yourself, like you've wriggled out of like the grips of that, where you're in a role. Like, yes, we benefit from capitalism because we live in that society. I don't think there's you know, with a certain level of privilege, when you have a certain level of privilege, you benefit from capitalism. It's like,
absolutely,
a hand-in-hand situation, isn't it? It's difficult.
Yeah.
But I feel like in the role that you manifested it, you worked at it. I feel like I'd never even heard of this role before, and like you kind of described it, and then you were like, I found this role, and it was exactly how you described it, and I was like, whoa.
And then I got it.
And then you got it.
And then I got it.
I knew you were gonna get wild.
I even said to like Alex, I was like, if I'm gonna go back full time, I want it to be in a role that's like this, and I want to get paid at least this much money. And then I got the role, and then I got the exact money, like the exact figure that I said. I was like, okay, this is weird. But then, like, as you were just talking about, like, working under, like, corporate capitalism, I am working for an organisation that's a little bit, it's B Corp certified, so they will only do things, they won't partner with other clients that mess up the planet. Like, they aim to sort of make the world a better place through technology, basically, and using like their digital capability. Now they still have to make money, like they still have to make like millions, billions, blah, all of that.
But it's like how you move in the world, isn't
it? What this has allowed me to do, and it has come with the privilege of being able to navigate corporate structures to the most part, albeit I've encountered sexism and racism. This goes to show that, you know, as a light-skinned, able-bodied, heteronormative, all that, that, you know, I have, some of it has worked in my favour, and I think that's really important to acknowledge. But now what I can do with some of the power and privilege and status that's been acquired is I do, like, harm reduction in the workplace, and create spaces of safety and psychological safety through educating my peers and calling out problematic stuff. Although I've got to say, where I'm working, it's been a dream. No one bats an eyelid when you talk about sexism and racism or stuff like that. Like, no one's like, because it's
nobody gasps, clutches their pearls at the mention of white supremacy.
Exactly, because they're B Corp certified and they're having to, and they want to make the world a better place, they have to have people that are aligned with that. That means doing the work. So it's really, I haven't encountered, I'm literally like, normally I'd have encountered something by now, like something problematic, even for something little, like someone,
it'll be a microaggression,
like calling
but it
the
would
name
be
of
there.
Somebody else, even exactly. though, like, you know what, anything like that. But no, and I've had loads of people like double check us, like, oh, is this how I say your name? Like, everyone's super respectful. Like, yeah, it's been Whoa. It's like a completely different world.
People asked you how you say your name.
Yeah.
Itself,
and
like,
I actually got someone else's name wrong. And to be fair, it was their name is spelled Liza, and I was pronouncing it Liza, but it's actually Lisa. But as soon as I found out, I was like, I am so sorry, Lisa, I mispronounced your name, I'll only, you know, I'll be sure to call you Liza. And she was like, oh no, I don't mind. I was just like, girl, I've had my name butchered for 10 years. The least thing I can do is call you by your actual name. And she was like, oh my gosh, she was a bit like, oh whoa, but I was just like, no, I respect you. Like, I will not carry on calling you Liza. Like, don't do
that. I know.
That.
It's a completely different
name,
isn't it? I feel like it is a different.
I know. That's like me calling you, like, Ryder. Like, I would never, never. And if I hear anyone, I'll be like, it's River.
Do you know what's really sweet, actually? I went to a chiropractor yesterday. It was amazing. It was really, really good. But the lady who works at reception, she said, oh, it's Ryder, isn't it? She was trying to remember how I had told her how I say my name. And I said, no, it's Rither. I didn't say no. I said, it's Rither. And she said, got it, Rither. Rither, and then repeated it a few times, and I said don't worry, you know, because we're used to minimizing. I've been called all sorts or something like that, and she was like, no, I'm going to say your name properly. And I was just like, oh
yeah.
It was just really sweet. And it's like, you know, no, like a lot of people, like, you're made to feel like, oh, it's such a massive burden to
let me just conform, so I'm not, you know, being, I'm awkward, you know, not being, I'm a not place being... of content, a point of contention.
Exactly.
I'm just like, no, be the point of contention. Like, the least you can do is move through the world as yourself and be recognized as such. Anyway, slight tangent from
no,
from
but
that.
I think it is linked. Because I feel like,
but those,
it's these little interactions, it's
that also little... legacy. These are also legacy, and I think doing that work, that inner work, the outer work, they all move us. It might in our lifetime only feel like we're only ever making a drop in the ocean, but they have exponential
because even drops impacts. Make ripples.
Exactly. I was speaking, you know, Alex was so sweet the other week. He said some people move through their life and their legacy is so, with all the wealth and all the privilege and all the thing that they have, you know, the impact will be nothing because they just don't distribute it. You know, they just keep it in their family and their family don't do anything with it, you know. And he was like, you've probably done enough. He was like, you've probably done enough for a lifetime. And I was just like, no. I was like, no, dude, like, I've still got the rest of my life. I've got, you know, got Rafe to bring up and... I still don't know what I'm doing with my life, but I'm just doing it. And he was like, you did this petition. He was like, you raised this petition. All these people signed it. You got that agenda moving. I was like, oh yeah, how did I forget about that? But like, I think that's one thing that from a physical, I guess, impact, like, I feel really proud of. And I hope that It's not everything, but it's kind of like a, I hope it's a marker to say that I care about social justice and I care about racial justice particularly, and I hope that that continues to, you know, grow and move.
It will. Like, you created not just a ripple there, but a wave. And I think it will be continued by other people.
Yeah.
And as well as yourself within your workplace, it's a continuous thing. I think a lot of the issue, and I think this is the thing with legacy as well, is that it's like passing a baton. It's not about I start and I'll finish and then tick, I've you know,
dumbest
solve
thing.
Racial inequality and inequity in the world. Because unfortunately, that is just not what this dunya, this world, this temporary place, this temporary abode is about. It's about doing enough with the time that we have and hopefully impacting people in a good, positive way that they'll want to continue that work that you might have started. And you know, when I say work, I don't always mean like petitions or protests or boycott or writing to your MP or things like that. I definitely wholly believe in radical joy and rest and compassion and all of that thing, all of those things that are sometimes waylaid to the side, where actually they're just as important. And
they're,
I feel
they're interconnected somewhere.
They are interconnected. Yeah.
As you were talking, I was like trying to visualize that Venn. There's like probably a Venn diagram that someone's drawn somewhere where it's like it's probably a bit of, you know, action, whether it's like write to your MP, do this, but then there's like rest, joy, you know, spending time with your friends, like showing that it's all one leads to the other, and in so many ways.
I know, and I think, you know, I think this is what the greatest sort of people who made like such a massive impact, like Malcolm X, Nina Simone, I mean, there are just so many people who have made masses of impact, and sometimes they're polarized in such a way that you forget the rest of their humanity. But then, you know, a documentary will come out, or a book will be written, or somebody will say something to try and remind people that they were so much more than that one thing.
Yeah,
they really had, you know. And I think it's Aja who says often, actually,
she likes seeing them do ordinary things.
Ordinary things,
like
exactly.
Martin Luther King, just like riding a bike.
Riding a bike.
Yes,
exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say.
But so this is what I love. I like some of my like favorite people that I follow. Yes, they may have had like amazing impact on the world, like, you know, like Rachel Cargill, there's her legacy with the Loveland Foundation is like a masterclass in kind of when you amass a platform, and
it's phenomenal.
She I mean, there's the therapy fund for like Black girls, there's just so much stuff.
There is an abundance, and
And ways
to give. It's rooted in rest, reparations, not in a monetary way, but in a way for access to things that might not have been accessible.
Yeah, absolutely, and so. But I love seeing her on like. On the beach, I love seeing her in love. I love listening to her little anecdotes. Those are some of my favorite. They almost feel like diary entries when she does share them.
I think she does share them like a diary entry.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I love entries. Seeing that. I love, you know, like I just love seeing people lean into their full humanity. And I very rarely, I mean, when people do share things that are raising awareness, or maybe I don't want to say traumatic, but almost
they can be traumatic at times depending on what it is that you're reading or viewing.
Yeah, harrowing or particularly distressing. I'm really careful not to just affirm obviously it's important to affirm recognize that, and it's right to do so, but it's recognizing people's full humanity when they're just chilling, or they're like, you know, having a stressful day with the kids or whatever, or just telling a little joke, like whatever it is. And I think it's all very, very, it's all related, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think what I was thinking about when you were speaking then is that it's that legacy of not continuing harmful narratives that were placed upon us, perhaps, and we weren't shown the best way. So for me, it's about modeling rest to my kids, like rest and play and joy and respect for and a love for nature, and getting out there and getting noticing, you know, all that nature has to give. And for me, that's really important. Actually, you know, there were very many things that were modeled to me, but I think in society sort of level, there's lots of harm, you know, especially in terms of capitalism, where you're asked to give so much, like so much is taken from you, and we're not really shown that. And I think it's like a new generation, a new movement of actually we need to model joy to one another and create a legacy of really leaning into that joy, especially for the most marginalized people, and you know, underrepresented people who have that taken away violently from them, to be honest. I think that's like a different type of legacy, but I think that that's really important as well. So I feel like, but it's these things that, like, we're talking about Rachel and Layla and Aja, you know, and others, we're thinking about others, and but it's these things that we're saying, like, I feel like, you know, you've said it to me, and then you might say it to somebody else at work, and I'll say it to somebody else, and it's like these ripples and interconnected webs of creating somebody's legacy. But that's like that, you know, waterfall of impact that kind of stems from them. And I think that that's really powerful. But it is by word of mouth. It's not, I'm not sending you an email about this, or I'm not writing a post about this, although I have drafted a post on legacy, but that's that's separate. But do you know what I mean? I feel like there's that.
Yeah.
Because when I close my eyes and I think about, as an image, what legacy means to me, it's literally very basic and tribal and grounded. It would be people sitting around a fire telling stories about, you know, the people that they love, or, you know, happy memories and that kind of thing. Like, that's what I envision.
Very community-centered. Very.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, there's, like, this whole thing about storytelling and the power of storytelling. Like, that.
Yes.
We are natural storytellers, like all humans are.
We just need to spill the chai to one another. No, constantly. Exactly.
But in a good way.
Yeah, but that's how we survived, right? Like, you'd meet another, you'd probably, like, I don't know, in the cave people days, would be like, oh, that family down the cave, they don't know that there's a saber-toothed tiger that's moved into the woods down the road, so let's just tell them. But then whilst we're chatting, they'll share, like, their best nettle soup recipe, and we'll be like, sweet, give us that. Yeah. Like, you know, it's how we...
It's an exchange, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's... Do you know what? This touches on the friendship stuff and the reciprocity stuff. It's a very reciprocal... It's a beautiful energy exchange.
Without extrication.
Because you're...
Without...
Replenishing.
Without sucking. Exactly. It's a balanced, harmonious way of exchanging, without one person having, like, a power. There's no power involved in that.
Yeah, or one having to be depleted. And
exactly. Yeah,
and that's the other thing about legacy, is the material. I mean, we can touch upon it on another episode, but specifically around generational wealth and legacy, I think that's really, and so many folks, and this is particularly, I think, true of children of immigrants, where the immigrant families had to, like, make sacrifices, and you know, for their children so that their children can have a better life, but it leaves them often working way beyond into retirement or not having the kind of assets that set themselves and their family up for relative comfort. It means that someone's always struggling somewhere.
I think for me, part of my legacy, yes, it's storytelling and people saying nice things, but like Layla was saying in her post, like at the top of this year, that she wants to create that generational wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just for her immediate children and family. But it's much more community based than that. And I think for me, I would absolutely love to, but it's not something that I've ever thought of until I read Layla's post. I'll be honest, I didn't realize that I could potentially, I mean, I'm not in a position to right now, but potentially I could give that to my children. I never thought of that specifically. And I think that I think it can be important because it's like it doesn't have to be attached to when I die you can have a house. It's like, do you know what I mean? It's not like that kind of thing where I will link it in the show notes, but there's a really interesting Nuffield report which speaks to, let me just get it up, intergenerational wealth transfers and how they drive inequality in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a whole report, and it found that over a third of British households receive a wealth transfer in the form of an inheritance or a substantial gift from their parents at some point. And like over one third is much higher than in the US, which makes a lot of sense. If you know, because of colonialism and settlers and stuff like that. And also I just want to, I'll put in the show notes as well, the Resource Justice Group, and what they do is just a link to, they ask people who have a lot of wealth privilege to redistribute their wealth with grassroots movements. And so it's not just like a transference from rich person to rich person or rich person to rich company kind of thing. It's very, very much rooted in recognizing the harmful systems at play and kind of navigating around them so you get to the heart of a community. So I'll link that in the show notes as well. And sorry, I'm going back to what you were saying, because you were saying about the generational wealth thing and about immigrant families, because it is all interlinked, and I think we definitely have to have a whole separate episode about it. Perhaps a rich tea about it. But I was going to quote you, and well, I was going to quote Aja. I was going to quote Aja, where Aja talks about you on page 201
in her book.
In her book, Consumed: The Need for Collective Change.
Love it.
So it says, both Ruby and I spend a lot of time talking about wanting to give back to our parents for the sacrifices they made for us to have better. And then you say, you're quoted, I think that's the difference to those with generational wealth. Fundamentally, there is no sacrificial element. Both generations are able to live in financial ease. No one goes without.
Yeah, that's key. No one goes without, whereas, often, you know, our parents might not have a safety net, or if they do, then as the next generation, we don't. Like, there's always some element of sort of struggle or lack of safety when it comes to you know, having enough in this world that is very extractive.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be very much true for my parents, who are very much working class, and that is, I wish ease, especially, I mean, for both my parents, but I am a bit biased, especially Mama. I recognise my bias. but I That's really want ease for them, because she's worked really, really hard to ensure that we have basics, like, you know, a decent footholding on being able to, like, you know, go out in the world and succeed and thrive, hopefully. And I think this is, I mean, I can't remember now, you'll have to remind me. You know how I was saying about, okay, I've remembered. So Resource Justice, on their website, they say that we want to work alongside and amplify the power of existing movements for social and economic justice, and acknowledging the racialized accumulation of wealth, especially those challenging white supremacy. And they have said that also, that we recognize the current system of philanthropy reproduces many of our society's entrenched power dynamics, particularly around coloniality, I don't know how you say that, coloniality, race, class, disability, and gender. And I think not only does it sound awesome, you can tell that they're doing the thing. But we were speaking, weren't we, before we got started, about how it's still, I mean, you were saying actually about your workplace as well, and how people have asked to pronounce your name correctly, and how people don't bat an eyelid when you're talking about sexism, racism, white supremacy, and all of that kind of thing. And that's, I feel like when people or companies and stuff like that, they skirt around, they like sort of do a little dance around and hint towards these things we know the name for, I feel like it causes more harm, doesn't it? By it adds to erasure and gives power to the oppressor. Whereas when we name the thing, then we know what we're talking about. It's like, it's, you know, it's direct. And funnily, it caught my eye on the next page. Raja's book on 202, right at the bottom, is highlighted. Like in bold, she said, if you don't have the vocabulary or people around you who understand the way you communicate to talk about the harmful system which clearly exists, then those who benefit from the harmful system can claim that the system doesn't actually exist at all. And it made me laugh, because it was like exactly what we were saying. And I think that's the thing with intergenerational wealth as well, is that people came not to have it. People came to be working class and stuff like that, but actually they will have had a lot of help from their parents, and they don't acknowledge those factors. And I feel like they're just very much embedded in those harmful systems as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Did that make sense?
I hope it made perfect sense. It made perfect sense. Ooh.
But yes, that was our rich tea topic. I hope
it's good.
It's given you some thought, food for thought about, you know, legacy and what kind of legacy you're going to leave, and stuff like that. So, oh my god, we got to sing the jingle quick.
Oh my god, we better do it.
One, two, three, go.
Fool of the week. So many fools. Which one to choose? I think that was all right, you know.
You sing it so slowly. I feel like every time you sing it slower and slower.
I sing it fast, but you're like a delay, so I have to slow myself down.
Oh my god, that's what I'm doing too. The it's just a delay. We're going to have to do it when we're in person. Yeah, we are. We'll be on point. We'll dazzle their ears.
I might come up with like a little backing track on the keyboard.
Oh my God, please
like
do.
Like a lo-fi version.
Do it on GarageBand. Yeah, we can do
Alex
a lo-fi
can play
version.
The drums.
Yeah, he can. He can be put to use.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, fool of the week.
Mm, so many fools. Which one to choose?
For real, like, I know. Do you know what? I'm sure, did I write one down? Because my brain doesn't work. Hang on, what are we? Oh yeah, I wrote in my notes on today's episode, I wrote, fool of the week in brackets. Mine might be delusional white women who pretend to be black.
Oh my God.
I'm referring to No White Saviors, Kelsey, who has been kind of posting she's been posing as a black woman, essentially, hasn't she?
She's hiding behind the handle of No White Saviors. Yeah. Which was, she was a co-founder with, is it two other black women? And she kicked the black women off the platform. Basically, and has been up to all sorts of shenanigans, which is causing harm.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it reminded me very much of that woman, Rachel Dolezal. Dolezal? Dolezal? I don't know how to say her surname, sorry. There is a Netflix documentary about her, but yeah. She literally thinks that she's black.
Wow.
And it was really harming her sons, who actually are black boys. Yeah, so it was very much giving me Rachel Dolezal. I don't know where her surname is from, so it's tricky to pronounce, but apologies, because I will look it up to find out how to pronounce it. But yeah, it was very much giving me those vibes of, you know, I mean, to be honest, like, even like the Kardashians, come on, like, they're just so many people.
Yeah, do you know one that I think, because it's been a minute, I would like to put Kim K and Molly May and Kirsty Allsop in the bin.
Kirsty also, that's who else we were going to talk about.
Yeah, seen as we're talking about legacy, but we just touched on generational wealth a few months ago now, but yeah. Kirsty also was like, well, you know, if you stop buying your cappuccino and have beans on toast instead of buying avocado, then, you know, with a little bit of money, you'll be able to save for a house. And I think she was just in a completely different world. She's like the daughter of a baron, isn't she? So, yeah. Like, she was all like, yeah, basically, don't get any joy from life.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't get any joy from life, you'll be able to afford a house, except that's not the case. Because
so basically, it's all your fault.
Yeah.
That you don't own a house.
Exactly. She just wasn't really willing to look at the sort of societal level of things.
She's such a pompous little shit.
Yeah, yeah. and I put her in the same bracket as Molly May. She was just like, well...
Just work harder. Got more hours in the day.
Everyone has 24 hours in the day. So, and look what I've been able to do with my life. I'm like, okay, you went on Love Island. You've got a massive platform. You have all these deals coming, and you have like...
Because you look white, a certain way.
You're white, you fit the pretty privileged aesthetic, like whatever, like... Shut the hell up. And then there's Kim K. And literally, I think them two must be in a WhatsApp together. Because he was people just don't want to work. In fact, I can't get the audio. I'm going to have to try and find the audio. And it's just like, nobody wants to work these days. Too fucking right. I don't want to work. Yeah. What I want is to be, I want to be at the spa. I want to be able to get in the garden and tend to my flowers.
Legacy of joy.
Like,
rest.
I want a farm where I can, like, grow my own fruit and veg and, like, make my own jam from the fruit from the trees and, like, have my friends come over. Like, That's what I want to do.
My friends wouldn't come over. My friends would be on the land, on the commune. They would live
because it'd be a commune.
It would. Look,
if there are any investors in there that would like to distribute a couple mil.
Yeah. So to make this dream come true. We can buy the land
and build some houses on it so that, like, I can live in commune with my besties. And in which will you won't see, I'm telling you now, you will not see your money back. So you just need to be okay with that. But what we would do with that is we would create a legacy of, like, peace, and we would, you know,
and basically justice.
Disturb the, peace and justice, and we would disturb the status quo from our soul space. So if you'd like to fund that, like,
rooted in joy, we would,
absolutely, anti-colonial, anti-capitalist, like, you just, if you can just send some of that. If anyone knows Jeff Bezos, like, he basically, like, he'd, in the time that it takes Jeff Bezos to have a shit, you know, he'd have probably earned that 2 million. So just send it our way, yeah?
He won't even know.
Jeff's probably listening to this right now.
He probably is. So is fucking Elon Musk, like, and putting him in the fucking bin exactly. as well. Oh my God. Oh yeah,
because he's trying to buy Twitter.
He has bought it.
He's bought it now, hasn't he?
He's bought some shares in a few months ago, and then, and like, has, like, sidled his way in and kicked out.
Douche man.
Praga? Is it Praga? I've forgotten their name, sorry. But anyway, yeah, they can go in the bin. And then, sort of interlinked with all of this, like, legacy, intergenerational wealth and stuff, I saw this post by Polyester Design, which I'll link in the show notes. It's a tweet that somebody wrote, and it says, all nepotism babies go through several phases. 1, failed photography career. 2, failed modeling career. 3, failed music career. 4, failed acting career. And then it has, like, a few other things, and shares their podcast. But Arja's commented on it as well, and it's worth going to go look at that conversation, and probably listen to their podcast as well. It sounds really interesting. And again, I think Arja's so sweet, where she'll be like, well, I kind of benefited from nepotism, kind of. It's not really, is it? It's like, when you're not in a position of power in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
it's making room for others, isn't it? And I think that's the only way that we will get anywhere, is that, like, I know for a fact that there's maybe, like, one or two white women who will speak my name in the room when it comes to putting me forward for work, but I know that there's an abundance of black and brown women who do that, and that's the only way that I've gotten more work. So
that's awesome.
That's, like, a good way of being a nepotist.
Yeah,
when you pull each other up, but it's not the same. But anyway, it's an interesting.
Do not ask what you can do for white supremacy. Ask what white supremacy can do for you. I love it.
No, it is. It's something to think about as well, isn't it? So that was those were our fools of the week. And now, what we're loving.
What are we loving?
What are you loving?
I haven't even thought about this. What am I loving? I've already spoken about Bridgerton. I can't keep talking about Bridgerton. I spoke about it last week. I spoke about it last week. I can't speak about it again. Have I found anything else to obsess over between now and then?
I don't know. Do you think we should link in the show notes Badam, Haram Badam?
Haram Badam.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, that cracked me up so much.
Oh, that was so funny. Yeah.
What are you loving?
Oh, I'm loving Moon Knight.
Yes, Moony Knight.
I guess that's what Rafe got me. Actually, no, yeah, Alex made up this joke, and he said instead of calling it Moon Knight, he called it Moony Knight, which made Rafe just cackle and giggle. And we told him that it was about a superhero that wards off his enemies by pulling moonies, and he's just like, he's absolutely like, yeah, giggling over that. But no, I really love it. I mean, I love Oscar Isaac.
He's a cutie.
Oh my gosh. When did I... So, I thought he was a real creep in Ex Machina, because he is a real creep in that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then I watched him in Star Wars as mm-hmm. Poe Dameron, and I was like, oh, he's yeah. really cute.
Yeah.
Then I watched him in this really shitty Netflix called Triple Frontier, and it's got, like, Charlie Hunnam and Ben Affleck in it, and it's not that great.
Oh, I've looks, not watched that, actually.
Oh, my God, but he looks... That's the first time where I, like, saw him with, like, flecks of grey in his hair, and I was like, damn, he's so cute. and is Pedro Pascal in it as well? I can't remember. But then I watched him in the Wired autocomplete interview on YouTube with him and Pedro Pascal. And I'm probably going to admit something really, really terrible here, but I've probably watched that interview more times than I care to remember. But them two together, I just love them both. I think they're both so cute. And
we, like, can link it in the show notes for your enjoyment
so,
too.
they're so cute. I'm here for their bromance.
They are really cute.
And then, right, when he was in Dune as General Leto, I was like, wow, he's just so good. He looks so good. He looks so handsome. He's so handsome. I love him. I mean, it doesn't take me long to obsess over people. Like, I'm still not over, like, my Viscount Bridgerton. Like, I'm still not over that. But yeah, like, no. So anyway, yeah, in Moon Knight. Anyway, we're talking about Moon Knight.
I'm here.
Maybe what I'm loving isn't Moon Knight. Maybe this is just Oscar Isaac.
Yeah. Yeah, we've pinned that down. Yeah, it's not just Moon Knight. Clearly, it is not.
Honestly, but, like, when it comes on and it's like, I'm like, Alex, it's Moon Knight time. He's like, yes, I know.
Well, Chris keeps falling asleep and I happily get to rewatch the episode. So
it's great.
No, he is really cute. I can't say that I'm as smitten as you are, but he is very, very cute. And he's very queer. Funny. And Moon Knight is, I am loving it also. It is really... really funny, and
yeah.
I know there've been some, like, problematic things about Ethan Hawke, haven't there, that I'm not privy to because I don't keep up with
I didn't know
gossip. No. Possibly I could be mistaken, don't take my word for it. And but he's good in it. I think Ethan Hawke is a good kind of villain. I don't know if he's a villain just yet. Because I feel like it's there's more than meets the eye with Moon Knight.
Yes,
it's really, really good.
Some twists and turns coming.
I think so. And, you know, we have been thinking about a former friend who we thought, well, we hope that they feel seen, seeing as it's, like, got this whole Egyptian vibe and stuff. But it's, for me, I feel the familiarity, you know. It's not, like, a million miles off from, like, Pakistani, and there's, like, that whole, I don't know, like, Muslim vibes. It feels, like, familiar. It feels familiar.
Yeah, it does. I think you're right.
And I have been to Kuwait. So
have you?
Yeah, and they've got, like, you know, it's not like a dissimilar vibe there as well. So
yeah.
But yeah, it's just it's nice, and I love Layla, the not the love interest. She's got, like, her own thing going on.
She's a freaking awesome. Badass.
She's so badass, and she's beautiful.
Yeah, stunning.
Not that matters, but she is beautiful. But. Yeah, she's a great character. I really like her in it as well. No, it's just a really good show. I'm really enjoying it. It's really different. Also, seeing as we're talking about Marvel, can we just take a minute to talk about Miss Marvel, which is out in like a month and a bit.
God.
A month and a bit.
Cried watching the trailer.
I know, same.
I absolutely bawled my eyes out. Do you know what? It's just...
It wasn't even me that watched it. It was like 5-year-old Ritha or something. Like 7-year-old Ritha.
That was all the version, exactly, all the versions of me, all of me, just sobbed with joy. Like, is finally happening. We're finally getting a Pakistani representation, woman, Muslim,
Pakistani, like in a Western scape, yeah, and it doesn't look like stereotypical and stuff like that. No. And I will in a second do a Google for the artist. She's a Pakistani woman artist who did some stunning posters and activism around Aurat March, which is the safety of women, specifically in Pakistan. But she was asked by Marvel to design the poster for Miss Marvel. And it's beautiful. It's really, really beautiful. Awesome. But I feel like I'm doing a disservice to her by not saying her name. So I'm going to just do a little Google. Shezil Malik.
Amazing. You go, Shezil Malik. Yeah. I hope that your work continues to be pushed out there and seen.
It is absolutely stunning, and I'll link the poster in the show notes as well, because it is
I feel like we should have a watch party. I think we should do a watch party for the first episode, because I want to be holding someone's hand whilst I'm like crying watching it.
I can't even imagine how are we going to feel like watching it? I'm so excited. I'm genuinely so, so excited.
I mean, me and you are big geeks. We've talked about this before. You know, it's our geek hearts, our heart hearts, you know, all.
I know. It's going to be so good. It's going to be so good. Podcast listeners, if you would like this, please let us know in our DMs, emails, Patreons, wherever you want to get a hold of us. That would be so good. Even if it's just me and you, I would be content.
Me too. But then I just thought, you know, we're probably not the only ones who'd want to.
No.
To be in, sharing that be joy. Be in community together whilst we like celebrate this historic. To me, it's historic.
It is. I think 100%.
I can't think of anything in history close to maybe. I don't know. I mean, they cast Riz Ahmed in Venom, but like I think he was a villain, so
there's not been anything for little girl Rither, like,
yeah, exactly.
And Zora's gonna love it. We talked about it before in another episode, but why has it gone out of my brain? You know, the other Marvel movie with like a really diverse cast.
Oh yeah, the Eternals.
Eternals, that's it. So that felt quite groundbreaking.
That was big for me too.
It really felt big, and it felt, I don't know, and you know, like I said on that other episode, it was really affirming for Zora, and so that meant a lot to me as well.
Yeah. And do you know what? The same thing that affirmed Zora affirmed the little version of me, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gassed for her. I'm already gassed for Zora and Dahlia and for Rafe, because they've never had these modelled. And so for them, it's just going to be like, yeah, well, of course, I had Miss Marvel and I had Riz Ahmed, like, growing up, you know. Like, that's not going to be, like, a thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, because, you know, like, it was the 20th or 25th anniversary for Bendit, like, Beckham.
Mm-hmm.
But that's teenager, adolescent kind of level, but there's not been anything for, like I said, like little girl kind of, yeah, like young girls, that kind of thing. I've not really seen any Desi Pakistani proper, you know, center stage kind of representation at all.
Literally, there was nothing, and like in the teens, like, it was really only Bendit with like Beckham and a little bit of Goodness Gracious Me. Even then, that was such a teeny tiny like bit of representation. So
yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's what we're loving. I didn't really say what I was loving. I'm loving the bulbs that I planted back in November, even though I've only literally got like 5 or 6 tulips, I literally was nearly crying this morning in the garden because it was just, they just bring me so much joy. They're so cute. And then I've got this like little plant pot that's slightly broken, and there was a tiny weeny little snail on it, all stripy, and it looked really cute. And my tulip looked like an emoji in the wild, and the sunlight was shining, and there were little bluebells, and just a tiny little patch of garden. But it just really brought me so much joy. I love going out there in the morning. So yeah, and you know, I'm all about the flowers,
and I love that.
and spring. So it's nice. It's a nice time of year, isn't it? And I'm looking forward to Eid. Eid is coming. Like the last episode, Ramadan was about to start, and now Eid is going to happen soon.
I know.
And I'm so excited. Me and Mama have designed a menu, and we've invited like my non-Muslim friends as well as some of my family, and obviously you're invited if you can make it down. We don't know when it is going to be yet. And we're just going to have like food and people like coming and going and stuff like that. So because it just so happens it's going to be on a bank holiday weekend, which is
perfect, really.
It's perfect.
I'm looking forward to it.
I don't know what I'm going to wear yet. I need to find.
Yeah, I'm just going to wear something that I wore to someone's wedding last year, like this cream suit.
Oh, I love that one.
And I think I'm just going to wear it again because it's been like a year since I've worn it. So yeah, I'm just going to wear that.
I literally have nothing.
It's not very colourful, but it's got a really nice...
Oh, it's got a lot of detail.
Really nice it flares out really nice at the waist. I spent like £100 on it, so I'm going to wear it.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. You're sorted.
Sorted.
Right, then we should sign off. You're gonna go back to work. Thank you for recording with me in your lunch break. I love you so much.
I love you too.
Okay, and find us in all our usual places. What do we do? How do I finish the episode? Thank you for joining us.
Join us on. So I have a Patreon. So you should join me there. Rina has a Patreon, so you should join her there. Join us both, because we're not expensive.
We're really not. I'm cheap as chips, I am.
If you really want the chai, like the gossip, that's where you go to get it. And then come find us on Instagram. I'm at sheflourished_, and Rina is before and... Are you...
Yeah, before, underscore before, as well.
Before and again underscore, so we both have underscores at the end.
We do.
So come find us there. Also, I should have led with this, really, is go onto Apple Podcasts and leave us a review, because if you leave
Please
us a review,
do.
It will help the podcast reach more people, and then when it reaches more people, we'll have an awesome, awesome community that we can, like, you know... we can do little get-togethers, little events. We'll have our own event and stuff like that. So
yeah, no, and honestly, like our patrons on Patreon are very much helping to keep this thing going.
Yes, exactly. It helps us with editing, with hosting, with artwork. Like it all contributes to all that.
And so thank you for joining us on today's episode with me, Rina.
And me, Rabia.
I don't think we've ever finished that way before. Never mind. We'll mix it up. Goodbye.
Goodbye.